This is a podcast from ABC Local Radio Overnights. I'm Rod Quinn. It all started with margarine. The no-frills margarine at Franklin's was the first generic product or generic brand for a product to be launched in Australia. And when you hear the words no-frills, you pretty much know what you're getting. That the packaging, no-frills, the product hopefully is good, but it's also going to be cheaper. And it's an interesting thing, isn't it, that, okay, you're paying less and the packaging is different, and maybe the exact thing that drew some people to this idea of buying generic brands turned other people off, because some people wondered where these products came from. Were they of lesser quality? Why were they so much cheaper? And from that one brand or that one product, well, generic brands have since featured prominently on supermarket shelves across the country. But what is the story with generic brands? Why do people buy them? My guest played a pivotal role in the introduction of No Frills margarine and has more than 35 years of experience in the marketing, sales and logistics management in the food industry for companies like Dairy Farmers and Goodman Fielder. Alan Roberts is now a food industry consultant and director of strategy audit. And he's here with us. Alan, thank you very much for coming in.
It's early. Good morning.
You, in fact, used to work, not exactly in this building, but on this site.
For 10 years, I worked for Dairy Farmers, and this was the Dairy Farmers head office. There was a factory that made custard and yogurt, and as well as packaging the milk that was delivered to your door.
It's amazing, isn't it, to think that even as late as the 80s, there were kind of dairies in the city, or you know, manufacturing plants manufacturing dairy products in the city.
It was quite a move to close this plant down. Dairy Farmers built a big new plant out at Wetherill Park. A number of the people who are working here, quite a number, had lived and worked. They lived within walking distance. They'd worked here all their lives. So all of a sudden, these 55-year-olds who'd worked here since they were 17. Had to either leave or go out to Wetherill Park, and it was pretty confronting for most of them.
And even Dairy Farmers had a distribution centre across the road up until really the last, well, 5-6 years.
Yeah.
It's amazing. What is strategy audit? What do you do?
It's a one-man band consultancy. I work with small and medium-sized businesses. Really what I do is bring a corporate perspective to smaller businesses. On most occasions, small businesses are started and run by people who are functionally very good. They're engineers or they're toolmakers or they're whatever it is. And normally they're lousy at all the other stuff and they don't have the time, don't have the expertise. So quite often it just...
Yeah. You do it for them?
Yeah. Well, I help them. I don't generally do it for them, but I help them put the processes in so that they can get it done for them and manage it easily.
Okay, so generic brands, let's go back a little bit before that. Supermarkets, they were relatively new even in the 1970s. When did the corner store kind of fade out and supermarkets replaced them in Australia?
Yeah, it was, I guess, during the late 60s and into the 70s.
Yeah.
When I first started after I finished university and all those things, and I did the Young Australian thing, and I travelled for 4 or 5 years. When I came back, there was Coles and Woolies and 7 or 8 other chains of various types, mainly family run.
Things like Franklin's?
Well, Franklin's were around, but there was MFC and Jewel and Bilo and...
Pamuans.
Yeah. There was a whole pile of them.
Okay. And why did Coles and Woolworths emerge? Because Coles was a variety store. It wasn't like the supermarket that we know today.
Well, Coles started as a variety store in Melbourne early in the 1900s. By the 60s or 70s, it evolved into the supermarket. The supermarket business you see now, as well as still having the variety stores under other brands.
So I remember going to Franklin's in our local shopping centre. Narrow aisles, everything kind of stacked up, not a great brand choice or product line choice. Why did that all then start to change?
Well, Franklin's was the first discounter, and it was a very successful business. Again, run by two guys, and they actually had the biggest range They had a bigger range than Coles and Woolies.
Amazing.
And they'd have one facing of every product. And there'd be products stacked everywhere on the floors, all over the place. One of the tenets of retailing is stock sells stock.
Uh-huh.
And so they just put
the
stock.
The more you've got.
The more you've got.
The more you sell.
And the busier you seem. And Franklin's were very smart. One of the things which I've always admired them for is they brought back middle-aged women into the workforce as
checkout chicks.
Well, no, as managers.
Oh, okay.
And some of these women were, you know, they were 40 and above, and they were smart but uneducated in a formal sense. Smart, aggressive, focused, and they were grateful for a job, and they were as tough as nails. And they made those stores run, and they were much better than the university-trained counterparts in Woolies and Coles. Right.
So Franklin's then, it's no surprise that they brought in the no-frills, the generic brand. Where did it come from?
The marketing manager at the time of the business that I was working for, which evolved over the years into Meadowleaf Foods, came back from the US. And there was a couple of discounters in the US, I suspect Walmart, but I don't know for sure, who were starting to use generics. And I think one of them was using the No Frills brand. And when he came back, he just wandered into Franklin's, to the guy who ran Franklin's, and suggested as an idea, which was consistent with what Franklin's were doing in their business, low prices, serving the consumer. And so they gave it a run. And they picked up No Frills, and No Frills became not just the Franklin's brand, it sort of became the generic description.
Yes, exactly,
for all of
right. Yeah, it didn't matter what it was. People always referred to it as No Frills.
Yeah.
Because it was first, was it because it was best as well?
My view is that because the single words No Frills absolutely describe what you got.
Okay. So how did the public react to this? How quickly did they take it up, or were they initially reserved about it?
They took it up pretty quickly, but you could see distinct differences in different parts of Sydney.
Okay. Was it only in Sydney at the start?
Yes. Franklin's was very Sydney-centric.
Okay, right.
In later years, they had stores elsewhere, but in the early 70s, or mid-70s, they were very Sydney-centric. Mm-hmm. Out in the western suburbs, lower socioeconomic or blue-collar type areas, they took it up very, very quickly because it was cheaper and the product was quite good. There was rules about what you could put in it and what you could say about it. But I remember doing a piece of research, and a lady who lived in Double Bay told me that when she bought this stuff, she'd make sure she had a packet of cornflakes sitting over the top of it so none of her friends would see her buying No Frills.
And the fact that it was margarine, that's an interesting thing as well, because margarine had been around, but it was only recently in the last couple of years prior to that that it had been allowed to be coloured yellow to look like butter.
Yeah. The butter, the dairy lobby in New South Wales was remarkably strong.
Yeah.
And they'd kept margarine-looking grey stuff that, you know, you'd really only put on your toast if you had no choice.
Very interesting. So after margarine was then that success, what happened after that? What brands started coming in? What products?
The first products that came through after margarine, and Franklin's took it up very quickly because they realised very quickly that this was going to work. So they started putting it into categories where there was high turnover, where consumers were not all that wedded to brands, where price was important, commodity-type products.
Because there's many reasons why people buy something. It could be the brand, it might be the price, it might be the design of the label. With these products, it had to be ones where people were concerned about the price. I can't imagine margarine was all that expensive. How much cheaper was the No Frills brand?
Quite a bit cheaper.
Okay.
Quite a bit. I can't remember the numbers, but it was quite a bit. And margarine itself was a lot cheaper than butter.
Yes. Okay. So then the question people always ask is, how are they able to sell it for that price? What was it about it? Were they using not just margarine, but we're talking about other products as well? Why were they so much cheaper? And was it only, surely it can't only be to do with the labelling, for example?
That's a complex question. when you manufacture a product, you in most cases can't reduce the cost of the product all that much. But if you get paid in 30 days instead of the usual 70 or 80 days, which the retailers pay for proprietary product, that's a saving. If you know how much you're going to sell, you can save money. You can save a bit on the ingredients, but that varies considerably between categories.
So were the ingredients for these sorts of things cheaper ingredients? Were they lower, in quality?
Not in quality, but you could mix and match. If coconut oil was cheaper this week than safflower oil, you'd vary the ingredients around a bit to put more coconut oil instead of safflower oil. And you could, in the factory, you could make it so it was pretty consistent. Okay. And so the consumer couldn't really tell the difference. And it was all perfectly safe and legal, right, and all those sorts of things, okay, but you're able to play the commodity game a bit.
You mentioned that No Frills kind of became the generic name for these sorts of products. How soon did Woolworths and Coles and the others start getting in on this?
Pretty quickly. Scratching the dark memories, it was probably within 6 or 8 months.
Right.
They firstly copied margarine, and then they copied the other categories. Franklin's were well and truly leading the way.
Okay. And they had very plain names, Gold and Black, I think, or Black and White brand, things like that.
Black and Gold.
Black and Gold.
Black and Gold. That was the offering that in New South Wales used to be a wholesaler called David's Holdings.
Yes.
Who supplied all the independents. And Black and Gold was their version of No Frills. And Woolies had theirs and Coles had theirs.
Okay. And when did it really move into the mainstream, do you think? How long did it take for it not to be something that the people of the eastern suburbs of Sydney were afraid or, embarrassed to buy, and people elsewhere? When did it become really part of the mainstream, do you think? Did it take very long?
I don't think it took very long. It seemed to me by the early 80s that people were no longer prepared to cover their margarine with the cornflakes pack. You became a canny shopper if you were able to pick and choose the generic products that were good, because they varied remarkably depending on the category.
One of the things that people always suspected was that the products were exactly the same, and they just put different labels on them. That the margarine you might get at No Frills was the same as the margarine you get at Meadowlea or whatever. It just came in a different package. And in fact, even though the No Frills was much cheaper, it was because, not that they were making them cheaper, but in fact that the other products had inflated prices.
Sometimes that was true. Sometimes it's not. I'd suggest it's far less often true now than it was then.
Okay, so what products are we talking about? Because there was canned fish, there was all sorts of things that people thought, hang on, this looks exactly the same as the one I'm buying for three times the price with a fancy label.
Quite often it was. If you had a contract to supply one of the house brand products in the early days, quite often the manufacturer would just change cans, so it was the same product. But consumers are pretty savvy, and once they realise that it's the same product, then they'll buy the cheaper one. So quite quickly, manufacturers realised that they had to be different.
Okay.
And so they actively sought to make them different. And in some cases, the differences were not material in the cost of the product. It was just that the consumer could look at one, look at the other, know they were different, and make a choice.
Okay. I'm thinking also of something where the consumer actually would not know, something like pet food. If you're feeding pet food to your cat or your dog, they're not going to know what kind of a can it comes out of, whether it's a generic or whether it's a name brand.
I've never worked for a pet food manufacturer, but I suspect you're right. Mm. Although I'm told by my friends who are pet owners that their moggies are very selective.
Really? They'll turn up their nose at inferior pet food. Yeah. You are with Rod Quinn. This is ABC Local Radio. We're talking about generic brands, generic products with Alan Roberts on the program. And tell me about some of the tricks of the trade then, about particularly with alcohol, I think people may not know that what they are buying is a generic brand.
It's a fairly, the tricks of the trade, it's a, I think, a fairly recent phenomenon, particularly in booze. Woolies and Coles are the two largest liquor retailers in the country. I think Woolies is the largest by a very long margin, okay, and they own a number of other chains.
And you wouldn't even know that you're going to a Woolies to buy it if it's Liquorland or BWS or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, Dan Murphy's is owned by Woolies and Liquorland's owned by Coles, and they've both got other brands. All of the mass merchandising, mass marketing skills and supply chain management skills they learnt in supermarkets, they've translated into booze. Mm-hmm. If you walk into either of those two major chains now, there's, I don't know, lots and lots and lots of different beers and wines with fancy names,
yes,
and many of them are just house brands, particularly in wine these days. And they, you know, Freddie Bloggs's Black Creek Shiraz, you know, nine times in ten is something that has come out of a barrel that they've just dreamt up the name, and the consumers can't tell the difference.
But that's one of the things I find interesting about the whole generic brand thing is that, you know, there are many reasons people buy certain things. They might buy it because of price, they might buy it because of label, and they are buying it for the label and paying a premium for that. Why are the company's being so disingenuous, dishonest about that, do you think?
Well, retailers are in two businesses. The first business is selling stuff to people who come in to buy the groceries. The second business is in renting retail real estate to suppliers. So, and the buyers are judged by how much money they make out of the retail rental. And so they'll make decisions on the rental of the shelf space, which don't necessarily have anything to do with what the consumers might want.
Mm-hmm. And when you say rental the shelf space, where things are stacked, say, in a supermarket, it depends on how much these suppliers or the other companies, distributors, pay the supermarkets to get at eye level.
Yeah, yeah.
Or at the end of the aisles.
Yeah.
The end bins and things like that.
When you see a promotion in any of the retailers on one of the end bins, and it's, you know, 50 cents off.
Yeah, yeah.
The supplier has paid for the space a lot of money, and they're funding the discount. It's not the retailer that's doing it.
It's the
supplier. Yeah.
On ABC Local Radio, Alan Roberts is our guest. If there's anything you want to talk to Alan about when it comes to either generic brands or, as we've heard, just about anything to do with supermarkets and things like that, or comments that you'd like to make, then please 1-300-800-222. He's come all the way in here to talk to you, and it'd be rude of us not to do that. 1-300-800-222. You can text us as well, 0467-922-702. Maybe you've got some thoughts about generic brands. And we don't mind talking about brands. It's not advertising. We are talking about what people do every day, which is, you know, go shopping to these incredibly dominant supermarkets. 1-300-800-222. DRM says home brand cheese was Bega cheese. So you could have bought the Bega cheese. I don't know if that's true, but DRM, I'll take your word for it. You could have bought the Bega cheese, but the home brand, it's the same, exactly the same.
Well, yes and no.
Okay.
Same.
You know about cheese because you were there with dairy farms.
Same cheese, same cows, same milk, but the house brand cheese, once it hardens up, they flog it.
Right.
Whereas the bigger cheese, they keep it in storage for a period of time. It matures, tastes better, and it costs bigger to keep it in storage.
Okay.
So that is a difference, but when it came out of the end of the machine, yes, it was the same product.
Now, one of the interesting things we've seen in Australia in the last few years has been milk. The milk wars to get people into supermarkets, and both Coles and Woolies started selling them for $1 a litre. And they brought us generic brands, their own brands, rather than, you know, dairy farms or whatever, which might be $3 or $4 more expensive. Generally, maybe three times as expensive, I don't know. Why was that so important, the whole milk wars?
Coles, if you go back 6 or 7 years, Coles was on its knees, and it was taken over by Wesfarmers. They brought in a bunch of new management, which largely came from Tesco in the UK, and these were pretty smart people. And their task was to turn Coles around. And one of the reasons, one of the ways they did that was start to differentiate Coles from Woolies. Because when they were operating in the same way with the same products, yeah, the same brands, consumers preferred to go to Woolies because the stores were nicer. So they started...
but there's a reason why people go to various stores. And the perception was Woolworths had nicer stores.
Yeah. And
then Coles found, well, hang on, the number one reason is price. And if we say our prices are down and we're selling milk for cheaply, well, they'll come in.
Drags people in. And milk is something that most people buy a couple of times a week. So milk for a buck was a strong reason to get people in. It's all once they're in the store, they'll buy all their other stuff.
Meanwhile, the poor old dairy farmers, I don't mean the company, I mean the actual farmers, were being ripped off.
Oh, they're being belted around the ears.
Appalling.
But they'd been belted around the ears for a long time. I mean, when I was in the dairy industry, and it's going back a long time, over 20 years, there was thousands of dairy farmers, and the average age was probably in the 40s. Now there's significantly less. I don't know what the numbers are, but I'd suggest there's less than half there was 20 years ago, okay, and the average age is probably in the 60s.
Indeed, sadly. 1-300-800-222. We'll start with some calls in a moment. Wayne from Oakley says, Bear said, no frills was good except for the coffee, which was recycled dirt. He didn't like the flavour of that. I'm sure it was wonderful coffee, yeah, Bear. But coffee is one that really there is a difference really between cheap and expensive, is there?
Some products there is a lot of difference between cheap and expensive. Well, I think probably coffee's a good one. At the other end of the scale, there was something like ice cream. To be allowed to call a product ice cream, there were specific things you had to do.
All right,
you had to have 10% butter fat. You had no more than 100% overrun. And if you didn't have those two things, it by definition wasn't ice cream.
So they couldn't sell it cheaply because it had to include all those things.
Well, it ended up being sold cheaply or cheaper,
yes,
because it was in huge volume. But it was a very, very good product, and people very quickly realised that the generic ice cream was in fact a really good product. And so they bought it, and for a while, Franklin's No Frills 4-litre ice cream was the single biggest selling ice cream in the country by a country mile.
Wow. Okay. Wayne from Oakley says, where does Dick Smith fit in all this? Presumably the label wasn't successful. It was for a while. It was, in fact, appalling management that was the problem there. But people now, because the Dick Smith stores are going to close at the end of April, I think, and it's April the 1st today, we should point out, people are not buying the Dick Smith generic TVs because they think, well, what's going to happen?
Yeah. Look, Dick Smith was, when Dick got out, people started, the chain lost its identity. Suddenly it was just flogging anything to everybody and had all sorts of competitors, people like Jabby Hi-Fi, and there was a lot of other competitors. But when Dick was running it, it was a place for the gadget people.
Yeah.
They tried to be all things to all people, and nobody can be all things to all people.
Final text before we move on to some calls. Bashful says, I bought a house brand tin of tuna this week and found a grub in it. Surely generic often means poor quality, does it?
Not necessarily. I mean, you can get a grub in anything. Okay. I mean, it's just bad luck, bad management. Right. It probably came in from Thailand.
And that's where you've got to look. And that's one of the things that people also say, is that with these generics, you often do not know where they come from. The labelling is not as strong as in the other, the name brands.
Yeah, and that's true. And over the last 5 years, when the Aussie dollar went to $1.10 US, there was a flood of house brand coming in from overseas. A lot of local manufacturers that had been surviving with a house brand contract lost the business, and a lot of the medium-sized suppliers went to the wall over the last... Over the last 5 or 8 years.
All right, let's start taking some calls. They're all men so far, including three people called Peter. I'm not quite sure why. Let's start with Peter. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning.
Yes, we want to talk about loyalty cards.
Yeah, I've noticed that same kind of supermarket that I have, the mix of product varies from store to store I was wondering how much effect the loyalty card has on how the stores order and place their stuff.
Yeah, that's a very good question. I suppose because they know now through loyalty cards, you know, who buys what, when, and all that. Does it make any difference to what is stocked at various stores?
Perhaps a little. What most stores are still, what they stock is dictated by both their location and their size. The range varies depending on the location and the size of the store. And I don't think the loyalty cards have much to do with it. What it does is show the retailer who's buying what and where, so they can over time adjust their mix.
But I mean, they would have their stock inventory down to a fine art, wouldn't they? They know what is being bought and when it's being bought. What does the loyalty card add to that?
Oh, it just gives them lots of information about the individuals.
Okay.
And over time, the loyalty cards will become a fantastic marketing tool, okay, particularly when you start to integrate the loyalty cards with, you know, the so-called big data and geolocation in your mobile phones. If a retailer knows in the very near future, probably next week, knows that you're just around the corner and you normally buy X, Y, and Z, they can send you a text message saying,
it's on
now for the next 10 minutes and drag you in.
Kind of like a Groupon sort of thing.
Yeah.
But from the big supermarkets. Yeah. Wow, that's interesting. Peter, good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, you want to talk about what's on sale in supermarkets?
Yeah, just a couple of points. With all the perishable goods going into the big chain supermarkets, they don't even own the flaming stock that they're selling, because they've turned it over long before they pay for it. So there's no time lapse there for interest to anybody, or to them anyway.
Okay, we'll get to that in a minute. What else did you want to say, Pat?
And, now I've got to think of the other one. there was one with the tuna. If you read the tins, all the local ones are all tinned in Thailand anyway.
Yeah.
So
I've
seen it in Woolies, two for $2.
Yeah.
And you usually have the individual price at the bottom, the single price.
Yes, that's right.
And the single price was $2.
There you go.
Yeah.
All righty, Peter, thanks very much for that. Okay, so perishable goods or any goods in supermarket, or the perishable that Peter was talking about, has already been sold. Or it's tell me what Peter was saying.
He's sort of right.
Yeah.
Most perishable product has a short shelf life.
Yeah.
And if it's not sold within a relatively short space of time, 10 days, 15 days sometimes, it gets thrown out. And if you're a supplier to the retailers and you're supplying them with apples or whatever, you'd be lucky if you paid in 60 days. Mm-hmm. So, yes, they're turning over the stock three or four times before they're actually paying for it.
That's why I always buy the stock that's marked down. Peter, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. You want to talk about something that was in the 40s?
Yeah, and I'm not quite sure when they cut it out. I mean, what's your guest name?
Alan Roberts.
Alan, hello, Alan. How are you, mate?
Good morning.
That's good.
Luckily, I don't go back to the 40s.
Yeah, well, I was 48 sort of thing, so I don't. But I was certainly in the 50s and stuff.
Yes.
I think it was Woolies. When they were, before they was a supermarket, when they were just a general,
yes,
what's your name, store?
Variety store.
Variety, thanks, yeah, that's a word. They had, I think it was, or was it Coles, St. Mark's brand, remember the St. Mark's brand?
I think you'll find that.
Yep.
Yeah, I was about to say it was Coles, but I you're right, it was Woolies, yes.
What was St. Mark's?
That was their...
Well, their own products, they had a whole range of them, they had shirts and...
Yes,
and I don't know if they had toys, but they certainly had cosmetics and stuff like that produced all the, and a number of them did. I mean, you've got existing ones now, DJs. I mean,
that's right, David Jones,
fashions, and
Jones,
a lot of them produce their own biscuits and and that sort of went back. I mean, I think the cooperative stores, certainly in New South Wales, they had a lot of their own products, sort of stuff. Some they manufactured. I mean, they used to manufacture their own bread. They used to have their own. Yeah. Bakery sort of stuff, but
that's a very good point. that, you know, generics probably obviously predate 1978, but that was the first time they really started appearing on supermarket shelves.
In grocery products, yes.
In grocery products, yes. Okay. Because, yes, David Jones has always had their own brands. And, in fact, it's bigger in Britain, isn't it, that you have whole supermarkets that only have their own brands?
The leader in that is Aldi.
Yeah.
I mean, if you go into an Aldi store, every single product, yes. The only exception I can think of is Vegemite,
right,
where they have the little Vegemite pot that nobody buys anyway. I think that's the only proprietary brand in Aldi. All the rest of it are house brands.
I have only been into an Aldi once or twice in my life, and one of the reasons I didn't like it was because there were no brands that I recognised.
Absolutely right.
They're all from South Africa or somewhere like that. I don't know. They're always... Anything weird, grocery-wise, always comes from South Africa. Don, good morning.
G'day, how you go?
Good, mate. You're a truck driver in the 80s.
Well, I still am.
Oh, thank you very much for your hard work for Australia, Don. What happened in the 80s?
Well, I worked for a interstate transport company, and I was working local for them. So I used to go in Sydney and in and out of Woolworths all the time, and back then the generic brands were perceived to be cheap and nasty.
Yes.
And I was surprised when I had to pick up a pallet that had been returned. They'd done their quality control on it, and this chunky dog food wasn't chunky enough.
Oh, no. And were the dogs complaining?
Well, every time you walk past them, they yelled at you.
All right. But
that business about the grub, it was worse than finding a grub in an apple.
Probably half a grub. Exactly right. Thanks very much for that, Don. Oh, dear. Kevin, good morning.
Yeah, how are we going? Yeah, really good show there, both of you there.
Thank you, Kevin.
I was asleep in the wee hours of the morning and started hearing it. I said, oh, what a shock, another person trying to keep me awake.
We do our best, Kevin.
Anyway, the thing I'd like to discuss is, you know, you got Coles and Woolworths, which are Australian companies, but the thing that annoys me about them, they really take you as idiots, as mugs.
Yeah.
Now, for instance, a typical thing you sort of see is, for argument's sake, they're selling crumpets normal price of $2.99. And then you get the extraterrestrial special where they say, we're selling for $1.50, half price.
Yeah.
But you go to Aldi every week and you buy them for $1.20.
Yeah.
And then on top of that,
who's the mug then, Kevin?
Well, I must be the only intelligent person around.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
Anyway, so the other factor is you got your normal Smith, crisps and things like that, and then normally you're about $4 or $5 or something and they used to be 250 grams, so just dropped them overnight, 175 grams.
Yes.
And you go to Aldi and buy stuff that's made in Australia, 250 grams regularly at the same price.
All right, well,
and you pay about $1.70 or $1.80 or something.
All right, Kevin, we don't do ads for Aldi, but I appreciate the fact that you prefer them, and that's fine. I mean, this is all about choice, and we know that, don't we? I'm not talking about the consumers. But, I mean, what Kevin was talking about, though, is something that really gets people mad, and that is they don't drop prices. What they do is reduce the size of the serving or the package.
Yes.
Who came up with that brilliant idea? Because, boy, I bet they're shaking his hand on a regular basis.
Oh, I suspect it probably goes back as far as the Romans.
Really? That far? Goodness me. 1-300-800-222 if you want to talk about your shopping experience or generic brands in particular. Someone says, have you noticed that Coles and Woolies had two generic brands, or they have two generic brands. They have more than two, don't they? Or tell me about what generic brands exist.
Well, there's a whole bunch of them. And
in the big Coles
stores. In the big stores. They used to have their real basic one, and then they brought out other one. I can't remember the names off the top of my head, but they tried to give them fancy names.
Yeah.
And
Select.
Select was one of the Woolies ones.
Yeah. And they also have one called Organic. And that's the brand name. It's not the actual way that the food is grown or that the whatever it is. They call it organic, so you think, oh, it's organic, but it may not necessarily be.
I'm unaware of that one, and I'd suggest that the regulatory authority which runs organic and certifies product as organic would probably have a problem.
Okay. Jeff wants to talk about Aldi as well. Hello, Jeff.
Hello. Thanks, Janice. I've got in front of me an Aldi brand. It's called South Point Estate, and it's a lovely white wine. Very great stuff.
A bit early today, though.
It's an Aldi. I know. I'm not drinking it. I'm just looking at it.
Okay.
Yeah. But that's an Aldi brand, and all right, you get to like it. Perhaps you might buy it again. Then there's another one in front of me, Farmdale Fresh Milk. That's another Aldi brand.
Yeah.
And then there was another one, I think it's Barnweller or something like that, and I bought their peanut butter. It's an Aldi brand again.
Okay, we're going to go through all the Aldi brands, Jeff?
Or? No, stop now. But when I got the Barnweller peanut butter, I had a closer look at it, made in China.
Yeah.
I complained to the ACCC about this. I said, I'm misled. I didn't think it would be a Chinese manufacturer with a name like that.
Oh.
It sounds very homely. Well, they said, we'll take note of that.
That's how they do
it. You won't hear from us again, but we'll take note of your complaint.
All right.
End of my point, we just get a little bit misled as to where the stuff's coming from.
Okay, that's a very good point. But, you know, that's the thing about brands, isn't it? Alan Roberts is our guest. They give you name, or they give them names like Mount Franklin or Cool Ridge to make you think, oh, this sounds pretty good.
The people who are marketing these brands, unless they actually do something to tell you why, give you a good reason why you should buy their product instead of somebody else's, isn't the brand, it just is a label.
Yeah.
Until consumers are able to sort of put human characteristics around the brand, it's just a label.
You know, I remember on The Simpsons once when I think Bart had to do, it was in the future, and he was testing drink products. And of course, they say, oh, this one's got, and they run through a whole lot of chemicals. We call it nature's goodness. And it's like, that's exactly what it is. They want you to think that it's something from the fields with happy cows and all that sort of stuff. Major, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Yes, mate. What would you like to say?
Well, hoping for some advice from Alan. When I go shopping, I look at the various brands of whatever it is on the shelf and try and pick which one has been copied with the generic brand by the packaging.
Yeah, and very much so.
I wondered whether that was a sort of an accurate way to try and pick something of similar quality with a lesser price, or did they mislead you with that sort of thing, or... Sometimes there's a slightly different lid or something, but the rest of the container looks the same.
All right, Major, thanks very much. Very loud there on the phone. But that is something that really gets to me, Alan, that the generic has the same colour. For example, you buy your soy and linseed bread, you don't get the original. Oh, hang on. They bring out a soy and linseed bread in Woolworths or Coles. It happens to be the same blue colour as the one that you've been buying.
That's an evolution that's really only the last 5 or 8 years. Prior to that, they were clearly different. But in the last few years, both the big retailers have, as part of the contract, we want you to make this look like X, but sufficiently different so we don't get sued.
But, you know, peanut butter, smooth and crunchy. I mean, smooth's blue, I think, and crunchy's red, or the other way around. And, like, they're all exactly the same, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah,
you could never think, well, we'll have green as crunchy. It's got to be blue or red or whatever it is. By the way, just going back to something we were talking about earlier, and this is totally apropos of nothing except September 11, 2001, we were talking about that and Bill Clinton being in Australia. This has got nothing to do with supermarkets, but Chris from Port Douglas has just texted and said, I was standing next to Bill Clinton when the first plane flew into the tower, 2001. He was having a beer at the local and listening to the local band playing Fairy Tale of New York in honour of him being there. Very surreal evening. I watched him as he answered his phone and suddenly jumped into his limo with his minders and took off. Thought it was strange that he left so quickly, only to realise when I got home and saw the second plane going live what was going on. Amazing. Chris, that's a remarkable story, and thank you very much for letting us know about it. Let's talk to Ian now. We're talking about, supermarkets, generic products. Good morning, Ian.
Good morning. How are we today?
Very well. We've got Alan Roberts here with us as well.
Good morning, Ian. It's still early for me.
Oh, no, I've just finished work, so I'm late. Right.
What were you doing in the 80s, Ian?
In the 80s, I worked at Coles in the head office.
Yep.
And in the early 80s. And the big drive and the push, I was in the advertising department, just a junior there, and the big push for home brand and the like. And I thought, oh, it's got to be cheap and nasty. And, you know, I left that job and went into transport, and I've been in it ever since. But I've been fortunate enough to go, you mentioned a couple of items before, as in the peanut butters, and the big company that makes peanut butters and cheeses and the like that we all know about. And I've been fortunate enough to actually go and see in those factories, to go and pick up freight and tomato sauce as well from another manufacturer, well known. And it's the same, a lot of it was the same product going into different bottles, and it didn't seem any different at all for a lot of it. Right. So perhaps it might be their buying power. And now I'm carting all of the produce out of farms into their warehouses.
Okay, Alan.
Well, you certainly can't discount the buying power of Coles and Woolies. It's huge. I mean, between them, and depending on whose numbers you believe, they've got in excess of 70% of the grocery market in this country. And if one of them rings you up, if you're a small supplier, and says, "This is what I want," you know,
you've got no choice.
Yeah, very little choice. They've got the leverage of scale.
Yeah, well, the big two, especially, are the biggest customers of most of the suppliers themselves. So, of course, they would.
Yeah.
All right, Ian, thank you very much for that. Victoria works in a factory. Hello, Victoria.
Hello.
Yes, tell me about the factory you work in.
Am I allowed to?
Let's try and avoid the names, but tell me about your experience there, Victoria. I'm glad you stopped me on that. Yes, well, tell me about your experience.
My partner and I both work in two different factories type things. One's fresh food and one's another one.
Yeah.
And, we do all packaging for Coles, Aldi and Safeway and all little tiny stores, the whole lot.
Yes.
There really isn't much difference at all, only the packaging itself. And they make so many different brands for, say, Coles. We've got about four or five different brands, but it's all Coles and it's all the same thing.
Can you tell us an example of a product, not a brand, but a product that it's pretty much exactly the same, whether it's generic or a name brand?
Oh, okay, salad.
Salad, okay, yeah.
Yeah, there's literally no difference. And we can't put our name brand on that. We can't put our name on it because Coles want to keep it theirs. And Safeway want to keep it theirs and Aldi and all that. So we can't put our name saying that we make it.
Yeah. What a shame. Victoria, thank you very much for that. Alan, you want to comment on that?
There's virtually no proprietary brands in produce at all. If you go back to the mid-80s, I guess maybe the early 80s, produce wasn't big in supermarkets. Yep. There was very little of it. Woolies led the charge, and they started to bring produce into their stores, and it became a very important part of their business.
Yep.
But right from the beginning, they didn't allow the development of proprietary brands in produce. Fresh fruit and vegetables, meat. There's only a couple of brands I can think of, and most of them are out on the edge in some way, organic or something.
I'm thinking, though, of salads, for example, which in the last few years, you're more likely to buy them in a plastic bag than you are just take it out and put it in a bag in the supermarket. And that is, I know it's easier to, it's easier to sell it because it's a certain size and weight, and it's easier to scan it at the checkout as well. I'm sure that's the reason. But there's no difference then, this is what Victoria was saying, between those salads and a name brand salad.
Well, there's no name brand salads.
That's it. They're all gone now.
Yeah, in produce, they were never there. Mm-hmm. Woolies and Coles are pretty much the only. There's a couple on the edges, on the fringes, but
that's it.
You know, virtually all of it is house brand.
All right. We're not going to get to all of our callers, and I'm sorry, but we'll get to Beryl, and I also want to talk to Rod and Phil. G'day, Beryl.
Hello. Look, mine's not really about generic, but I get annoyed when I go into the supermarket that you're faced with a lot of things that are two for such and such a price. Being elderly and I don't want to.
You only
want
to buy one.
I do want to buy one.
Yeah. Well, you should take it up to the counter and say, I want one of these and I want it for half the price of the two.
But would they do it? I don't think so.
No.
Here's what you do, Beryl. And I'm not advocating you do this or anyone do it. Get an entire, get one of the big shopping trolleys, fill it up with all your products, take it up to the thing, and if they don't sell you half, at half price, say, all right, and walk out of the store and leave the shopping trolley there for them to put it back on the shelves. They'll get the message soon enough, Beryl.
Okay.
Thank you. I'm not advocating anybody do that, by the way. Rod, good morning.
Good morning.
You want to talk about Bunnings?
Well, what the issue is I don't think a lot of people realise that a lot of the products in Bunnings are generic, because being an avid label reader,
yeah.
I'm absolutely amazed that the brands, especially in their painting section, the glues and the
yeah.
and all that sort of stuff, they have quite a dominant brand name. And, and it's considerably cheaper than the name brand.
All righty. Alan is nodding his head.
Bunnings is owned by Coles, and again, like in liquor, all of the supply chain management, cost management stuff they learned in supermarkets, they've transferred into Bunnings.
Okay.
And it's a lot of house brands. There's a lot of so-called brands in there that you won't buy anywhere else. For a while, Bunnings had a range of power tools, which an Australian company was having made in China, and Bunnings was 80 or 90% of their business, and they changed suppliers.
And that was it.
That was it.
Company
Bingo.
Went
gone.
Glenno, g'day, Glenno.
G'day, Rod. Just wanted to let you know a secret little trick that the toothpaste manufacturers did, especially when they changed from those foil type packs, where you used to have to pierce it with the top of the lid, the plastic lid. They found that created just a small hole. And to increase the sales and the volume, they switched to the plastic packs.
I love it.
And they actually increased the diameter of the hole, which means that you
use
more
toothpaste,
and it generated sales more quickly.
What an idea.
Yeah, and the other thing too is one of the recent things, say, in the last 10 years that's happened in supermarkets is they'll actually get the people that make the products and they'll get a representative from one of those major companies to come and sit inside the headquarters of the major supermarkets.
Yeah.
And they monitor how much is being sold. So that decreased the amount of lead-in times. So if you had, for example, those foods that are pre-made, once it got sold in the supermarket, then the manufacturer would know, okay, we need to replace that. So it meant a reduction of stuff kept in storage to go on the shelves. They could increase the size of the actual floor space in the supermarket because all of this just in time, where the product would arrive just in time at the store.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, Glenn, I've got to leave it there, unfortunately, but thank you very much to everyone's calls, and I'm sorry for the people we couldn't get to, Marty especially, but I'm sure we may discuss this again. Alan Roberts, Director of Strategy Audit, has been our guest. Alan, thank you so much for coming in.
Pleasure.
Well, that's another podcast from ABC Local Radio Overnights. I'm Rod Quinn. Thanks for listening.